Chasing the Yield. This is a recap of week ending May 14th, 2021. This is episode number 4 of The Yield. My name is Kevin Bay, and this is where I talk about my portfolios, my dividend investing strategies, and what has happened in the news over the past week. It was kind of a crazy week with the market going up and down in massive fashion. Pretty volatile. So overall, the markets were down for the week, even though Friday ended up on a little bit of an up note. But I think overall, things were still kind of down, like a percentage or so. But it's a fine example as to why I don't invest for stock price. Because a week like this past week would give me a heart attack. You know, things dropping. You know, if I was investing in an index fund, you know, if I'm investing in something that is replicating the Dow Jones or the S&P 500, you know, a 2% drop, depending on how much money you have in the market, you know, would give you a heart attack. You know, especially if you're investing in stocks that are not paying you dividends and you're just watching the value of your portfolio just kind of tank, going to the bottom. So, you know, this way, even though, yes, my portfolios did follow the ups and downs of the market, I was a little bit less volatile than the market overall. But, you know, when it did drop down, it did drop down, and my portfolio went right along with it. But the difference is that every single stock that I hold, they all are still paying me dividends. None of them cut their dividends. You know, the regularly scheduled payments, were made regardless. So while if you're only investing for stock price, and you lived through this past week, then, you know, you were down overall no matter what, period. End of story. So, you know, there were many reasons for why the market was down. You had a lot of the crazy things that happened in the news where everybody's reporting on inflation. You know, Wall Street Journal was reporting on inflation quite a bit this week. And a lot of the prices of you know, goods, oil, corn, all kinds of commodities. You know, food prices have gone up through the roof. Chicken prices have gone up through the roof. And then we had the case of the oil pipeline that shut down due to the ransomware attack. And that was, what, over the weekend? Over last weekend? You know, and the reports of inflation are concerning. In that, you know, you worry that the money that you have is going to continue to be devalued. The more that they pump money into the system, you know, the more supply of money, the less the money is going to be worth. And so when the federal government talks about passing another massive stimulus package of $2 trillion, $3 trillion, $4 trillion, whatever it is, that should, you know, leave everybody concerned that, yes, they're going to be pumping a lot more money into the system, and they're going to possibly put more money in people's hands, but it's not money people earned. It's not even money that they're returning from tax revenue. This is money that they're just printing. So that's a concern. And inflation has been all over the news, and I expect it's going to continue. You know, I think it right now it's a short-term problem because there's so much pent-up activity from coronavirus shutdowns that it's difficult to gauge how permanent this type of inflation actually is, at least right now in the short term. We'll know, you know, over the next couple of years, I think, what all this spending has done, you know, starting with the Trump administration, with the stimulus that they passed back during the height of the whole COVID hysteria. And so we also had the news from the Wall Street Journal about bubbles, you know, and the jobs disappointment, the jobs report disappointment. What the heck here? Let me pull this up. The Wall Street Journal, they seem to be searching for what is that next pin that's going to pop the current bubble, because the stock market continues to rise. Even last week, you know, it didn't really end down that much. But with all the normal news that would drop, you know, the stock market and cause the economy to kind of crater a little bit, it's not happening. And, you know, maybe it's because of all the money that's being printed, so it may just be a temporary thing. So from the Wall Street Journal, they reported the Fed report this past week said the virus remains the biggest threat to the economy and thus the financial system. April's jobs disappointment was a reminder of how unsettled the economic outlook remains. Still with the virus in a retreat, a recession seems unlikely now. That's what they say. A financial crisis linked to some hidden fragility can't be ruled out. So here's where they start searching. Still, banks have so much capital and mortgage underwriting is so tight that something similar to the 2007-2009 financial crisis, which began with defaulting mortgages, seemed remote. That's probably true because banks have they're not making loans for mortgages willy-nilly right now. You have to have some actual assets to get a loan, and the rates are low. But you know, the next financial crash usually doesn't come from whatever happened previously. You know, it's always something new. They continue. If junk bonds, crypto coins, or tech stocks are bought primarily with borrowed money, a plunge in their values could precipitate a wave of forced selling, bankruptcies, and a potential crisis. Here's where they sort of found a little bit of a pin. And it says here, but that does not seem to have happened yet. The recent collapse of Archegos, capital management from reversals on derivatives-based stock investments inflicted losses on its lenders, but it didn't threaten their survival or trigger contagion to similarly situated firms. Now, you know, there was a story also earlier, I think I get to that later, it's in a couple stories down, but the U.S. banks, and I think what might be a bad decision is deciding to loosen requirements to get credit cards. They're looking to share data about customers between banks, and they're going to use their histories as well as the balances in their accounts as some type of a gauge of whether or not they're creditworthy. And it might work for some people that genuinely are improving their situation and, you know, paying off their bills. But this does smell of the mortgage crisis, you know, pre-2008, when if you were breathing and you had a paycheck stub, you could get a mortgage, you could get a loan. And, you know, they were not good mortgages. They were variable rates. They were high interest. And then what happened was, as things started to crater, the economy started to go down a little bit. And then what happened? These people couldn't pay their mortgages. They lost their jobs. And then the banks were left high and dry. So, you know, I don't know if this is going to be more of the same, where the banks are going to issue a bunch of credit cards to people. People are going to run up a bunch of debt. And then at some point, the bottom drops out of this current economic bubble. And then they can't pay that debt off. And then the banks are going to be left with, you know, holding that bag. Will they sell that debt like they did before with the mortgages and package these things to sell off to other people? I don't know, but it does not smell good. It smells like a problem. In other inflation news, we had the consumer prices rising, and to me, it was as a result of the government COVID-19 response. Consumer prices rose sharply in relative terms as compared to the past decade or more, but what did we honestly expect when everything was shut down? Economic activity basically stopped. So in order to keep things propped up, as I mentioned before, you know, all the stimulus that's passed, lockdowns, they lasted more than a year. So now we have this problem where people have been paid all this money from unemployment, you know, or say if they have been working, they haven't been going out, they've been stuck at home, so they haven't been spending any of it. So now that things are loosening up a little bit, economic activity starting to pick up, you've got all this money, but now there's not enough goods and services, because things were shut down for so long. So too much money chasing too few goods equals higher prices. You have high demand, low supply. So food prices climbed 2.4% from the same month a year ago, including a 3.8% rise in the cost of restaurant meals and other meals away from home. Car and truck rentals surged 82% compared with a year ago, and airline fares are up almost 10%. This is going to be a problem. Again, I think it's short term, but, you know, what is going to happen 2 years down the road? So that's something you need to watch out for and make sure that, you know, you're well prepared. You have a good portion of your nest egg that has been set aside and saved, you know, should the next economic collapse happen. You know, we need to learn from our mistakes of the past. And, you know, while cheap debt, you know, if you're using it to where it works for you, is fine. But if you're running into debt just for the sake of running into debt so you can have things, that's going to be a problem. Into some stock news, Johnson & Johnson. These are news items from my portfolio. Norway will exclude the COVID-19 vaccines made by AstraZeneca and Johnson & Johnson from their inoculation program due to risk of rare but harmful side effects, a government-appointed commission said on Monday. However, those who volunteer to take either vaccine should be allowed to do so, it said, stressing the importance of dispelling any vaccine hesitancy. So they don't want you to take it, but you can if you want. Now, the news that I've looked at before, that the blood clots coming, especially from the Johnson & Johnson vaccine, which is the company that I have stock in, the number of blood clots and problems people were having seems to be very low compared to the number of vaccines that had been administered. It does appear to be lower than the other complications and even deaths that are happening from the Moderna and the Pfizer shots. But, you know, it's really difficult to find this type of information and those numbers in the news. Moving on, Germany, with also Johnson & Johnson news. Germany's lifting the prioritization for giving Johnson & Johnson's COVID-19 vaccine. They said on Monday, adding that any adult who wants it will still be able to receive it. So just like Norway, Germany is doing the same thing. The U.S., the CDC, said on Wednesday it found more cases of potentially life-threatening blood clotting among people who received the J&J COVID-19 vaccine. The CDC said in a presentation the agency now has identified 28 cases of these blood clotting issues. They called it cases of thrombosis with thrombocytopenia syndrome among the more than 8.7 million people who had received the Johnson & Johnson vaccine. That's why it seems odd. 28 cases out of 8.7 million. That's not a lot. So I don't know why the big hubbub over that when you see other things, being reported. Continuing on with Johnson & Johnson, Friday, Johnson & Johnson announced the World Health Organization and the government of Sierra Leone have begun administering the company's Ebola vaccine regimen as part of the WHO's early access clinical program aimed at preventing further spread of Ebola in West Africa. And, you know, I guess this is a charity function of J&J. They also announced that their Ebola vaccine regimen has received pre-qualifications from the WHO, which will help accelerate its registration in countries where Ebola is a persistent public health threat. So that's good. Hopefully, you know, the vaccine is effective and it helps those people in those countries. In other vaccine news, in interviews with Reuters, more than a dozen influential infectious disease and vaccine development experts said there is a growing evidence that a first round of global vaccinations may offer enduring protection against the coronavirus and its most worrisome variants discovered to date. Quote, we don't see the data yet that would inform a decision about whether or not booster doses are needed, unquote. And Kate O'Brien, director of the Department of Immunization, Vaccines, and Biologicals at the WHO, said that they don't see the data yet. O'Brien said the WHO is forming a panel of experts to assess all variant and vaccine efficacy data and recommend changes to vaccination programs as needed. I mean, it's a double-edged sword. If you are an investor in any of the vaccine companies, you know, you want to see, obviously, boosters happen because then that's more money flowing into their companies. But by the same token, if they're not needed, then perhaps things can open up a little bit better, a little bit sooner, so we can all go back to a normal life, which will help economic activity in general, which should help the world in general. Moving on to ADM, Archer Daniels Midland, they announced this week a plan to build North Dakota's first ever dedicated soybean crushing plant and refinery to meet fast-growing demand from food, feed, industrial, and biofuels from customers, including producers of renewable diesel. So soybean crushing plant, approximately $350 million for this complex, will feature state-of-the-art automation technology and have the capacity to process 150,000 bushels of soybeans per day. So that's good news. Supposedly they're going to complete this facility prior to the 2023 harvest. Matthews International Corporation, they announced the company has acquired the assets of Torella Energy Systems, a supplier of technology solutions to the global hydrogen fuel industry. Torella is now part of Matthews Sorosig, I don't know if I'm pronouncing that correct, engineering business. They're based in Vancouver. Torella, founded in 2012, is a leader in the design and manufacture of bipolar graphite plates for hydrogen fuel cell power systems. The strategic acquisition will expand Matthews' portfolio of advanced technology and manufacturing capabilities to serve the rapidly growing renewable energy market in support of energy storage, automotive, and other industries. Included with this acquisition is Torella's bipolar plate production facility in Phoenix, Arizona. Franklin Resources, they reported preliminary month-end assets under management of $1.5293 billion on April 30, compared to $1.4989 billion at March 31st, 2021. Microsoft stock is getting a boost on Thursday from Rosenblatt Securities analyst John McPeak, who picked up coverage of the software giant with a buy rating. The analyst's $301 target price implies a potential gain of nearly 25%. McPeak views Microsoft as a company with unmatched assets. Over a billion devices running the company's software, the world's largest developer ecosystem, and huge revenue that increasingly comes from recurring sources. Portfolio updates. So for the week, this past week, we go look at my different portfolios. I have three basic portfolios, a low yield, a medium yield, and a high yield. And the low, all across the board, everything ended up up, which is good. So I did not suffer the same downturn that the market did, which was low thanks to the last couple of days, but still not a good sign. So my low yield portfolio for the week was up 0.06%. And for the month so far of May, it's up 3.24%. These are in stock prices, in total asset value. The medium yield portfolio was up 0.2%. And for the month of May, that one is up 3.33%. My high yield portfolio, even that one, which I don't expect for the value of it massively to increase. That one is looking to produce income, period. That one for the over the last week is up 0.02%, and for the month of May, it's up 0.75%. So overall, not a bad week for me. We move on to dividend news, dividend reporting from the various companies I invest in. ADM, they announced their next dividend of 37 cents per share, in line with previous payout. And this is across the board. So I didn't have any increases in dividends announced, but every single company has matched their previous dividends, so everything is still on a level playing field. C.H. Robinson, they announced their next dividend of 51 cents per share. Owl Rock announced its next dividend of 31 cents per share. Eastman announced its next dividend, 69 cents per share. Eversource, their next dividend is 0.6025 cents per share. Oasis announced its next dividend of 55 cents per share. I'm sorry, this is the increase that I have here. 1.9% increase over the company's previous payout of 54 cents per share. Illinois Tool Works, their next dividend of $1.14 per share is in line with the company's previous payout. T. Rowe announced their next dividend. It's $1.08 per share, just as the previous payout. Icon Enterprises, their next dividend per share is $2 per share, in line with their previous payout. And FSKKR Capital Corp, their next dividend of 60 cents per share, also in line with the company's previous payout. Prudential announced this dividend of $1.15 per share, also in line with its previous payout. And 3M, they announced its next dividend of $1.48 per share, in line with that company's previous payout. All right, here's the review of my low-yield portfolio that I promised. I did blog this earlier in the week. So my low-yield portfolio is the first account I created when heading down the path of investing for income. It's an IRA, so it's money I can't touch until I turn 59 and a half. I'm 54 right now. So all the dividends right now get reinvested into the portfolio. And it's designed, or at least I tried to design it, to be the least volatile, but it also yields the least. It's the safest portfolio that I have. So the approximate dividend yield I receive on this portfolio is 2.81%. And right now the yield on cost, because I've had this portfolio for, I think since 2017, July of 2017, the yield on cost is 3.76%, and the beta is 0.95. So as far as I understand, beta is that anywhere hovering around 1, a beta of 1 is kind of an average volatility. So it's not, what I have is not expected to be a very volatile portfolio. Price should stay relatively stable, but the companies that I have invested in, their dividends tend to grow over time. And so that's why I set it up that way, because I can't touch that money until I turn 59 and a half. So I did start this portfolio in July of 2017. It's from a defined benefit plan that I rolled over from a company I was running. So the main goals are capital preservation, which is really the main goal of all of the portfolios, but this one more than others, and dividend income and dividend growth with enough diversity to weather market storms. And I hold 51 stocks in this portfolio, and here are the sectors in which I hold. I have financials, 26%, industrials, 18%, consumer staples, 15%, utilities, 13%, consumer discretionary, 9%, materials, 6%, communications, 4%, energy, 4%, information technology, 4%, and healthcare, 2%. You know, I purposely don't have much in information technology because it is a high growth area, but they do not pay dividends. Any of the high flyers, they do not pay dividends. And I, you know, while it's sort of like gambling to me to, you know, okay, I'm going to put money in Tesla, or I'm going to buy even Amazon, which is a stable company, but they don't pay. All of their money goes back into the business to grow the business, which is fine if you're investing for stock price. But, you know, to me, it's money I won't be able to touch, and if they're not going to pay me, I don't want to pay them. And, you know, with this portfolio, it's admittedly a little heavy in financials. I'm trying to keep it where no individual sector is 25% of the portfolio. So right now I'm a little heavy in financials, which I need to correct. But I'm not willing to make any changes right now. You know, I'm just monitoring it and see what happens. So the average dividend yield, as I said before, is about 2.81%. And the growth in dividend is projected for the last 5 years about 4.5%. It's projected because I've only held the account since 2017. So this year's growth is slow so far, but that should even out over time. This year, so far, my dividend growth rate is 2.2%. Over the last 5 years, on average, it's 4.5%. And if you project it out to 10 years, the dividend growth rate of this portfolio is 5.2%. So the value of this portfolio has grown more than I expected. And most of it, I believe, is because of the crazy record stock market rise over the last couple of years. So I would be happy with a much slower growth rate because I would feel it's just more stable. You know, and if there is a big market downturn, hopefully the portfolio would have grown enough to make any of those losses, you know, once the downturn does happen, because it will, it always does. Hopefully it makes the losses small. And I have a graphic that I will should pop up here on if you're using a podcast 2.0 compatible podcast app. I will have a graphic that pops up that shows how my portfolio has performed pretty well as compared to the S&P 500. Over the last month, my portfolio is up 3.27% for this particular portfolio, where the S&P was up 5.34%. Over the last 3 months, this portfolio is up 15.1%, where the S&P is only up 12.98%. Year to date, I'm up 15.44%, where the S&P is up 11.84%. So I've done pretty well, either staying with it or, you know, just being slightly under it. You know, so as a gauge, yeah. And I'm not even really sure how much that type of comparison actually works, but I know a lot of people do that. Again, I'm still very, very new at this type of investing and watching the markets in this fashion. So, you know, even though I am not investing for growth, it's something I still do watch, you know, for stock price growth, rather. And I will make moves depending on a company's long-term prospects and their increasing or decreasing dividend yield. So here are my biggest stock price winners, where I have gained the most. Albemarle, since I purchased them in 2017, except for Microsoft, maybe Caterpillar. I can't remember because I did have a few stocks before I rolled everything into the strategy of dividend-paying stocks. So Albemarle, since I purchased it, it's up 193.74%. Microsoft is up 126.19%. Caterpillar is up 110.58%. Target is up 103.72%. And Fastenal is up 84.59%. So all of those, the value of those have increased incredibly just in stock price alone. And that does not include the dividends that they are paying. Now, the biggest losers I have are, thank goodness, not as low. I didn't lose as much percentage-wise on these as I gained with the other ones. So Waco, I lost 13.45%. Consolidated Edison, I lost 6.8%. Enterprise Products Partners, I lost 6.83%. ExxonMobil, I lost 6.11%. And Black Hills, I lost 5.94%. So the percentage losses are much lower than the gains that I've had, which in this portfolio, thank goodness, that's the way I designed it, and it's, so far it's been working out. All in all, the stock price appreciation has been good. Out of 51 different positions in this portfolio, the stock price is down on only 8 companies. The income increase forecast is also very good at about 7.5% because all the dividends are reinvested into the portfolio. So hypothetical annual dividend income, if you invested $10,000 over the next 5 years, would increase to about $14,356.29. And we use the 7.5% figure because I have a, over the last 5 years, on average, a 4.5% increase. And with my current dividend yield of 2.81%, it's almost 3%. So use 7% as a guide, as sort of a ballpark percentage to know the growth in income over the years. So I am looking forward to turn 59 and a half because at that point, those dividends will no longer get reinvested into the portfolio. I'll, you know, unless something else happens, you know, right now this is my plan. And when I turn 59 and a half, I will, those dividends will instead come back to me and help supplement my income that will join the other portfolios and contribute to helping me maintain a lifestyle. So the complete list of stocks in this portfolio, as well as my other portfolios, can be found on my portfolios page on the website, chasingtheyield.com. I would be interested in hearing about your portfolios and any ideas you have for maybe some good, you know, good stock, or your thought process around dividend investing and investing for income. You can also post questions and comments on my website or at Twitter. My handle is @yield_chasing, or you can send your questions or comments to mail@chasingtheyield.com. This is the point where I have to hit the disclaimer, but I don't have it mapped to a button. So let me find it here. Hold on a second, because I should give this disclaimer every single time without fail. What did I do with it? This is the funny part. What did I do with that? I can't find my disclaimer. Ah, found it. Here we go. Hold on. Give it a moment. Because I didn't have it loaded. So now I got to open it up in a player.
ChasingTheYield.com and Kevin Bay are not registered investment advisors, brokers, or dealers. Information provided by ChasingTheYield.com and the Chasing the Yield podcast is provided for information and entertainment purposes only. All opinions provided are based upon sources believed to be accurate and are provided in good faith, but no warranty, representation, or guarantee, express or implied, is made as to the accuracy of the information contained herein. Nothing on ChasingTheYield.com or the Chasing the Yield podcast constitutes a representation or solicitation for the purchase or sale of any security. Past performance is not an indicator of future results. Please contact an investment professional if you have any questions regarding an investment.
So that is everything that I had for my portfolio over this past week. And not too bad. So hopefully next week things will get better. Things will stabilize. We got the gas pipeline back up and running. Hopefully, people actually start going back to work rather than taking the unemployment. That'll help. Just more economic activity all the way around. But that's it for this week, and I'll see you again next week with more news and reviews of items in my portfolio.